If you just raise your hand, stand up, ask a question, we'll do our very best. Yeah. So the question was, when we mentioned that reconciliation is an option, how do we reconcile that with the scriptures when we're called ambassadors of reconciliation or something like that? How would you address that, Hunt?
Yeah, I guess sort of sometimes it's not possible. One, because like if you're trying to reconcile, for example, with somebody that's passed away, you can't. And so there's some situations that's not possible. But I think it's one of those things that you aim for and that you pray about and you work toward, but sometimes it's not. And the other part of reconciliation is that two people need to be ready to reconcile. You can't reconcile. I can't reconcile with Sam when he's not ready, or he can't reconcile with me when I'm not ready to reconcile. So, you know, two people are involved in the process, so two people need to be ready. So, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, they might have different time frames, and one, like, for example, Sam may be more ready than I am, and he'll wait for me, and so until I'm ready, until we're both ready, until we get to that point, we can't reconcile, but that's something we're both aiming for and wrestling with and all of that stuff, yeah.
And reconciliation is a sense that there's a restoration of trust. It's just not, reconciliation is not, okay, you can stand to be in the same room together, okay? Reconciliation is now there's a trust that's been restored where we trust each other. Like Alice was talking about the healthy marks of a relationship, there's sincerity, there's safety. There's a sense of we can now pick up where we left off, so to speak, or we can start with a fresh slate. But there's sometimes you can't. For example, what if you're divorced and remarried, and your spouse is, you know, you're divorced and ex-spouse is remarried? Can you be reconciled? No, because now they're in two different. You could have forgiven each other for the things that you've done to one another. But to be reconciled is to pick up your relationship with a level of trust that you kind of had before the sin or the offense. You know. Almost giving them a brand new start. And it's not always possible if one person is not ready or unwilling, or they don't live anymore, or they live in another country. And but forgiveness, someone said this, forgiveness is not for the other person, it's actually for you. Or an analogy is, God calls us to forgive like we are reminded to pay down our credit card debts. Because if you don't do it, interest occurs, fees accumulate. It just gets bigger. So forgiveness is not so much for just the sake of the other. Actually, God commands us to forgive because it's good for us. It's good for our soul. It's good for our standing before the Lord and our intimacy with the Lord. Whereas reconciliation, you have to have another party to be reconciled. Does that bring a little bit more clarity? But again, I can see it conflicting with hearing in the scripture that we're called to be ambassadors of reconciliation. Yes, I think we are, but I think ultimately we're called to be ambassadors of the reconciliation that God offers all of us. Therefore, on that grounds, we can begin to have true reconciliation with one another. If we have not reconciled with the Lord, then it's not impossible, but I'd say very difficult to reconcile with someone else. So I think that's the context of that passage or those passages. We are called to be a community of reconciliation, a vertical one. And therefore, we can truly meaningfully have one. That our common bond is this. It's not that Alice and I are Korean American by descent or Korean Canadian. It's not that we both love sushi or anything like that. The most common bond we have is we've been forgiven by Jesus Christ. And that's the source of our reconciliation and the reason why we even want to be reconciled to each other. Hopefully that brings some clarity. Great question, though, because I could see there being, yeah.
Kind of a follow-up to that question. If you want to reconcile with somebody who maybe not be Christian, because you kind of said that both parties are kind of going towards that goal.
Yeah.
There's kind of that commonality, but what if they're not? How do you approach that?
Yeah, I guess in sort of the horizontal sense and the human relationship sense, you can reconcile. But I guess that ultimate reconciliation, you can't do that just because, they don't, if they're not a Christian, then you can't do that. So that part, you know, is missing. But I guess on that human level, you can.
Well, I'll throw this question out there to piggyback. Can you be reconciled with non-Christian spouse?
I guess in the sense that with a non-Christian spouse, you can rebuild trust, or you can work toward that. Like, you can forgive each other. I mean, you know, like, I have a couple, one's Christian, one's not. They've gone through, you know, affairs and all of that stuff. And they're at a point where they've really forgiven each other. But, you know, one person's definition of forgiveness, grace, mercy, reconciliation is very different than the other person. You know, they, one person doesn't really understand that. They understand it in a limited context, but they don't understand the spiritual, you know, implications of that. So yes, I would say that they're reconciling because they're restoring that trust and learning what it means to, you know, have loyalties to one another and start to forgive one another and heal. So in that human level, yes, they are reconciling, but ultimately in that spiritual sense, one person isn't. Yeah.
Yeah, and again, for the person who is the non-believer, where do they get their sense of freedom from the shame? That's my question. Are they free from the shame? Has the shame been absolved or expunged? There's a difference between pardon and justification. And if you heard the difference, pardon is you just you're not penalized for what you did wrong. Justification is you're treated as if you didn't ever do it. Are they experiencing pardon or justification? And again, justification for us is because of what Jesus did for us. And so on a human level, sure, they can look like they're reconciled and act like they're reconciled, and I believe they are. But are they getting to the deepest levels of reconciliation? You know, that, yes, we get along, but I'm not living in guilt anymore, whereas the other person still may be dealing with it. And the tricky thing is not when a Christian and a non-Christian are that way, it's when two Christians are not reconciled. You know, what's holding them back? And that's where I think if you're really stuck on that level, trying to do it on your own is very difficult. It's not impossible. And that's where, again, you have the body of Christ. You have older brothers and sisters, you have pastors, you have counselors, you have other people who have walked with others in this journey or who themselves have walked through that season multiple times. Get help. For some reason in the Asian American community, we don't ask for help. We're very communal, you know, but we don't ask for help when we need it because it's shameful. And again, but again, I think we just need to think about this. Jesus, for some reason, I was thinking about this. Jesus had three close friends. Why? Peter, James, and John. I understand Peter. John, I understand. I don't understand James. Because he doesn't really show up too much. He's, you know, yeah, you know. And if I believe it's not James, the brother of Jesus, who became the first leader of the Christian church, the bishop of the Christian church in Jerusalem. But I think Jesus needed companionship. He was human in every way. He was divine in every way. So if you're, you know, Jesus, when he went to the garden, he needed three people around him. He went to the Mount of Transfiguration. He wanted to share that moment with three friends. So I think we have to really change our paradigm of relationships or community. We have to invite more people in. And the more people come in, actually, I think it loosens the grip of shame also in our lives, in our communities. Yeah. But yeah. Without knowing the stories, and you know, we're careful not to say this is what you need to do. We don't know the dynamics or the nuances of that Christian and non-Christian friend. There may be a lot of other things. So those are just some broad strokes, without being hopefully too prescriptive or formulaic. Yeah.
Okay.
One more question, and then go ahead.
How do you know if a man has emotionally?
Yeah. Okay, how do you know if a man has left his parents emotionally before or during marriage? Okay.
How have I done it, Pat?
Let me think.
That's not a good answer.
Yeah. Do you have an answer? Let me think for a second.
I would say this. I'd say this. You naturally side with your spouse. I have a good friend. He does a lot of premarital classes and training. He gives the greatest advice. I think he should publish a book based on this one thing. He says this, and he lives with his parents. They live the same. They share the same home. They bought the same home. He says this. This is so good. This might be worth coming to this whole seminar. He says whenever his parents suggest something to him, he disagrees with it. So his friend says, "Why don't we go here for dinner?" He's like, "No." Okay, and then he goes back to his wife, and if his wife says no, then the answer is already made.
But it's his answer. It's not his wife's
It's not
answer.
his wife's
It's
answer.
his answer.
Okay, no, that's not a good idea.
Yeah.
But if his wife says, "Sure, let's go," she looks phenomenal. So he's the fall guy. He takes the blame, but she gets all the glory. Isn't that cool? Isn't that great? So guys, if you really want to really leave your parents, disagree with everything they say. Okay? And in most Asian American households, the parents really look up to their sons or whatever. They'll kind of listen to you. They won't be happy. So disagree and let your spouse change your mind and your spouse gets all the glory. Okay? That is so rich. And it's worked for them. And they live in the same house. They live on the same floor of the same house. Can you imagine that? One bedroom here, one bedroom here on the same floor. And that's how they've navigated it for 10 plus years. How do you know if a guy's left? I'd say this. I think financially is one way of knowing, because that's how some parents, I think, pull strings emotionally. If they're still supporting their son, even though their son has a job and, could support himself. For example, if a guy's living at home, is he bumming off their parents or is he helping out? Like, does he contribute physically, financially? In other words, him saying to his parents, "I'm living here. I'm glad I'm living here. But you know what? I'm a man living in your home, so I'm gonna pay for this utility. I'm not gonna let you pay for my lunch. I'm not gonna have you clean my room." There are boundaries. I have one brother I just had breakfast with, lunch with a couple days ago. He's financially in dire straits. He has a part-time job. His parents want him to come home. He said no. Because he says, "I need to establish to my mom and dad. I'm gonna struggle, sure, that I'm a man." And I said, "I'm so proud of you. Because your future wife will really reap the benefits of this." So financially is one way, emotionally. And do they dictate your schedule? In other words, I'll say this lastly. Does he say no to his parents and can he live with it? Or he's always saying yes because he doesn't want to disappoint them. A man has really left his parents when he can say no and then not think twice after he said no. Okay, Alice?
Yeah, I guess another thought that comes to mind is, for example, in a marriage, a wife will experience something with her mother-in-law or, in-laws, and she'll go run to her husband and share all about it. And I guess when he hasn't left his parents, when he's trying to defend, like, or explain, not necessarily defend, but even just explain why his parents does what he does. That will get any wife mad. And so, part of it is just listening to her, sort of trying to understand where she's coming from, and that shows, I'm a husband first. Like explaining my parents or in-laws, it's a natural thing because those are your parents. But it's sort of harder to sit there and listen, to your spouse. So that's one, I think, way you've left, or a husband has left, his parents. The other thing that comes to mind is, or I guess sort of the example was, when Sam shared the Facebook example, I think we fought because he was trying to explain why he did what he did. No, I just wanted him to listen and sort of understand where it's coming from. And so, not that there's areas where he's left, but I think in that way it was like an emotional kind of leaving. So, yeah.
And it's a process. It's
Yeah.
a process. I can't stress enough, if you can be financially independent from your parents, do it. It'll serve your marriage well. We took out all those loans because of our financial crisis. I paid back all of them. We saved, we scrimped, but I paid back her parents, paid back my parents. Again, they helped us. We needed their help, but I'm a man. I'm gonna live with the consequences of my decisions. And yeah, and again, Asian American culture, and I know all of you come from various backgrounds. Our parents they don't set us up to leave well, right? Because their identity is, and their security is so much wrapped up in us. And I'll talk about this a little bit in our parenting section. But it's not biblical. It may be cultural, but it's not biblical. And I think God knows what's best, even though it's so unnatural for us. And again, I know some of you guys are like, my mom's a single mom. My dad, you know, he's working 20 hours a week, 20 hours a day. 20 hours a week would be nice, but 20 hours a day. Again, but you know what? That's their choice. And they say, oh, we did it for you. Yes, but mom and dad, that was your choice. I honor you. I respect you. I'm going to be a good steward of your choices, but that was your choice. You need to allow me to make my own. So I think, guys, really, there has to be that financial, emotional. I'm counseling a couple who's dating, and he's still trying to, and again, he has his own house, a leader in the church. He's still trying to win the approval of his parents. I said, brother, you need to work on that. You need to find out what's underneath that. Because you'll never please your spouse fully if you don't know how to disappoint your parents. It's not to be mean. It's just for the sake of your spouse. Otherwise, don't get married. Don't get married then. If you really want to be someone's boy or son, stay single. Okay? And if you're fulfilled, that's fine. That's a noble calling. But if you want to get married, that's something you have to decide beforehand. My parents, again, I know some parents will be manipulative. Again, all the more I think you need to kind of cut off from being emotionally tethered to them if they're manipulative. That's a signal. Maybe you don't want that to kind of filter down into your wife and to your children. You want to kind of be a guardian of that emotional and health maybe your parents have. That's hard because I know you love your parents. They would die for you. They have in some ways died for you. Yeah, but that was their choice. And I respect it. I honor it. But that's their choice. Oh, man. It's hard. It's hard.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, this is something we've learned over the years, but, you know, when it's just Sam and I, like, it's fine, right? But then when we would go to our in-laws, usually, like, his side of the family, then I would just clam up. Or the minute that I know, like, I hear that, oh, they're planning a trip down here, we joke around how I turn into, like, another person. You know, I go in shutdown mode, I go in, like, sort of, like, task-oriented mode, and I become this other person. And so I guess part of it is, you know, over the years, we've been able to joke about it, which is a good thing instead of fight. But the other thing is, like, we'll sort of, like, talk about it afterwards. Oh, how did I do? Like, was I a husband first, or was I a brother first, or was I a son first, you know? And so we actually have conversations about it, and I can sort of say honestly, and he won't get mad. I can say honestly, oh yeah, in this incident I felt like, you know, you were a husband, but then when we did this, like, you know, like, I just felt like you just were a husband or a brother. And so I think being able to have those honest conversations with each other. And I think, you know, as sort of when you go into, like, even for me, when I go into my family, like, I go into a daughter mode. Like, it's just kind of natural, right? Because they're your parents and that's your home and everything's really comfortable. But I guess being, like, extra sensitive to always remember, oh, I'm a wife first or I'm a husband first. And I think, in it goes both ways. But yeah.
And remember this, in the context of marriage, you have experienced something with your wife or your spouse that you've never experienced with your parents. You've had sex with them. No. I'm not being facetious. It's the only relationship in the Bible where you become one. Only one. When you were in your mom's womb, you were one, but you became two. It's the only relationship in the scriptures that says you're one. Two will become one flesh. It's the only relationship that has permanence. So again, when you get married, you have become one, one flesh, one heart, one soul. You're not that with your parents even before you got married. Okay, so there's a distinction in scripture. And again, why is that? So that you can go to a depth of intimacy that will help you experience God in a deeper way as you connect on a spiritual level. Again, God's not saying this because he wants you to be mean to your folks. He wants you to experience the depth of connectedness and intimacy that he had planned and originated in his mind in marriage. Okay? So, again, God, he does this because he wants you to go somewhere maybe your parents have never gone, which is to that level of oneness. Okay? So, great, great question. And that's an ongoing thing for us to work through. But there is measurable maturity. Hopefully, in my life. Thanks, babe.